The sermon printed in your order of service was last week's sermon. So don't be afraid that you're going to get the rerun at a only lengthier. I was gratified to actually hear complaints that the sermon was too short. I can't tell you how good that feels, because it's opposite of, oh my God, is he ever going to stop, is really somewhat discouraging. And the whole sermonic process sometimes can feel a little bit discouraging. I was at a wedding yesterday, or I was actually conducting a wedding yesterday, and there was a wonderful live guitar player who was playing wonderful guitar live, and not thinking about the words of the songs that he was playing, and that can lead to some hysteria if you do know the words to the song. I can't say that Eleanor Rigby has always been one of my favorites. I like the cello part, but Father McKenzie's working on the sermon that no one will hear, no one comes near, and you don't sit down and write sermons week after week, year after year, just to fill the time. Either the time in writing or your time filling a void on a Sunday morning. There's a greater purpose to it. Is that purpose always achieved? Of course not. But one would like to think that in the moments of creativity, in the moments of connection, in an occasional moment of epiphany, of, oh yeah, something has happened. Today's sermon is supposed to be, it does matter. It does matter what we do, what we think, what we work on, how we are in the world. And I chose this as a sermon title, one to go along with the two other IT sermons this month. It is heavy, and whatever the other it one was, because the non-specificity of it. It, our lives, our efforts, the human spirit, our existence, our choices, all of these matter. They matter in the life of the world, and in our own lives, and we matter to each other. I chose it as a topic for the same reason that you find all kinds of laws and all kinds of references in the Bible, and that is you talk about things because there seems to be a need, because so often people have a sense that it doesn't matter. That it all is, in a very bad translation of Ecclesiastes, life is but vanity and a chasing after wind. That's not what Ecclesiastes says in the Hebrew, by the way. It says that life is breath and that it is inspiration and expiration. And our breathing, every breath, though invisible and by itself isolated, you could skip a one or two, but it is the life and the living principle. And one of the great problems that I see every day in people whom I meet, I talk to, even from time to time in myself, is that sense of, oh, what difference does it make? What does it matter that we live? What does it matter that we get up in the morning and read the newspaper? What does it matter that somebody laying on their deathbed waits for a child to come into the room and say, one last time, I love you? Where is the person taking that piece of information? I don't know where the person is taking that information. But from the deepest part of me and the deepest part of my experience, those moments matter. It's so easy to despair at any age. Now, our despairs are related, but they are somewhat age-specific. You know, dude, what does it matter? when we're young. Now, I'm not going to ever live to get old anyway, so what does it all matter? This is just all nonsense, and it's the man, and all the nice, easy cliches that I use, too. I'm not putting down the younger generation. I was the younger generation, and not much different from the present younger generation back then. As I get older, I see the what does it matter question shifting in middle years to what have I accomplished, what have I done, and the great Tom Lehrer line on celebrating his 40th birthday. He said it was kind of humbling to think of the fact that when Mozart was my age, he'd been dead for 5 years. We compare ourselves on the achievements of others. We compare our lives to the accomplishments of others. We look for greatness and grandeur and often find ourselves wanting, what have I done? All I have done is this and this and this and this. Then as we get older and we know that there is more time back than there is forward, the what is it all about, Alfie, question changes somewhat. Why should I get up this morning? What do I have to look forward to? It's not likely that I'm going to feel significantly stronger the day after tomorrow. It's not likely that I'm going to be able to do the things that I once did. Why bother living? Why bother being chained to this cycle of Groundhog's Day cycle of the same thing going on every day? I get up, I read the paper, it's discouraging to say the least. I take a shower, I shave. Not all of you do, I understand. I'm thinking of you, by the way, not necessarily any of the other people here. And you go about your day, and it can be just repetition and drudgery, almost like reincarnation on a daily basis, and nothing really changes in the world. We've had the same values, and every religion has proposed and promoted the same values since the beginning of time. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, plead for the widow and orphan. The highest value of every religion is peace. But we don't seem to be able to learn how to practice justice and peace and compassion. We seem every day to have to re-engage the world in what seems at times a depressingly futile engagement of what Catholics call, I think correctly, invincible ignorance. Invincible ignorance in the Socratic sense of ignorance, of really not knowing what's good for us, what's good for our community, what's good for each other. And I understand getting worn down by that kind of repetition. But what we do still matters. And that the world is unfinished and needs us still matters. That we matter to each other is beyond any kind of doubt. I have one of the greatest jobs in the entire world. I get immediate feedback. I get to find out often what the consequences of my words, of my actions, of my inactions are. I get to find out just what, just as an individual, the difference that all of us make to each other and the difference that we make out there in a larger community and in a larger world. That the fights have to be fought again and again. Yeah, I would rather see us learn how to live in peace, beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks. I would rather see that at least that part of creation get finished, the part where we learn to live with each other and love one another and love our brothers and sisters at least as much as the religious say they love their God. Yes, I think that that would be wonderful. That's a kind of completion that I can live with. But the fact that we need each other and that our world needs us is something to make our eyes shine, and while we may want to withdraw from time to time, should inspire us to connect with the world and with each other. One of the things that happens because I speak publicly and because I see people in moments of great transitions, I'm trying to cover weddings, funerals, baby namings, and the whole panoply of what public functions clergy have, because I get to see people and be with people in these situations, I find out what a difference a word or a smile or a touch, a sense of sensitivity and openness that we give to each other, what kind of difference this makes in the lives of real people. I have people come up to me from time to time and say, you know, you said something 20 years ago that changed the course of my life. I don't want that responsibility, thank you. But it is awesome power that we have with and for each other. It is awesome power and responsibility when we look into the eyes of the hungry and the homeless, of the wounded, sometimes of the mentally disturbed, of the psychotic, and for a moment treat them as a human being, and that often stays with them, and what we give to them often stays with us, and it's a feedback loop. It's a circle. I remember, true story, my first day working at Napa State Mental Hospital, I sat with somebody who was essentially catatonic. And I went back to my clinical supervisor afterwards and said, boy, that was a wasted hour. And my clinical supervisor said, no, not necessarily. You can't know. When this person comes out of it, that might have been the thing that made all the difference, that someone was there treating them as a human being with worth and with dignity, where everyone else was just treating them as a crazy person or as a problem. This is awesome responsibility. This is enormous power that we have in the world. And one of the great problems that so many people have is that we want to know what difference our actions, our blood, our sweat, our toil makes in the moment of the giving, and we simply can't. We have to do what we do, and the consequences may not unfold for years. The consequences may never unfold, even consciously, in the people whom we've touched, with a smile, with a hug, with a hand, just having been there for them and said, not fix the problem, but just been presence to them. We can't know. A great theological proposition was called Pascal's Wager, which was, and I'm not proposing it to you in its original form, but its ethical consequences are important. And that was, if you live as if there were a God looking over your shoulder, judging whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, and you're wrong, what have you lost if you've acted decently and humanely and morally and ethically? And if you act as if there's nothing out there and you can do any damn thing you want with no consequences and you're wrong, the consequences could be eternal and thermodynamically uncomfortable. Not that I take that literally, only metaphorically, but you can understand that in secular language also. What is lost by being decent? What is lost by letting the other person have the parking spot and gesturing with all the fingers on your hand. What is lost when you only communicate unidigitally? On the way to this wedding yesterday, somebody was tailgating me, then cut me off, and I thought long and seriously about honking and gesturing and generally telling them my opinion of their driving, their parentage, the marital status of their parents at the time of their conception. And then it struck me, what in the unlikely event would I feel like if they were hurrying to get to the wedding I was about to perform? And so, in an abundance of caution, I chose to be decent. What did... They didn't show up. I looked for the car. What did I lose? Nothing. I didn't lose anything. And in fact, I think that the payoff for saying, I'm above it all and I controlled myself, was even better than the payoff of honking and gesturing and waving, particularly if they had been packing. So that's another good reason to choose good over evil and generosity over a lack of generosity. I think that this is just so important. And I learned it really through personal experience. When I was in the hospital myself as a patient in the ICU, and it was not completely clear that I would get out of the ICU under my own power, a friend of mine came and just sat with me and held my hand. Wasn't words. He didn't fix me medically. It wasn't his prayers, even though he was an ordained Unitarian Universalist clergy person. It wasn't any words. It wasn't any prayer. It was showing up and being there and acknowledging my worth to him as a human being. That's immense. It's immense what we are able to do for one another. It's easy to think, as a lot of people do, as a lot of Orthodox religious do, that all of this is just a complete absurd waste if there is no eternal reward. And I just don't agree. Eternal reward would be very, very nice. I would love to be with all of those Virginians like Thomas Jefferson and his ilk, at least 72 of them. But heavenly reward is certainly a nice lost leader, so to speak, that a lot of religions use. But this is enough for me. This moment is enough for me. And the presence or absence of something else does not confer or take away meaning from the moments that we spend with each other. It doesn't have a thing to do with the meaning of life as we lead it from day to day, from hour to hour, angry, frustrated, feeling that it's all absurd, and joyous, ecstatic, and connected. They're all a part of life today in this moment. I believe that the love that we make and create makes a rippling difference in the universe. I know that people have touched me and changed me and influenced me, some in bad ways, some in good ways, but there is a relationship that we have with one another as human beings. And part of who I am, part of how I think of myself and understand myself and see myself in a mirror, comes from how other people react to me. Am I handsome? Am I smart? Am I stupid? Am I ugly? Am I good? Am I bad? Part of that, not all of it, but part of it, a good part of it, comes from what society reflects back to me. and therefore I have a responsibility to everyone who is a part of the creation of my life, which is everyone whom I encounter and people I haven't encountered, to understand the power that we have together in making each other. And so I feel not really Groundhog's Day futility, not really it's all vanity and chasing after wind, but I feel every day is such an amazing, remarkable gift. Human beings' ability to touch each other, to change each other, to change our world is something that is completely remarkable. And love. Love of each other. Love of life itself is such a remarkable gift. So we get up every morning and we take a shower. And we're going to get dirty again and have to take a shower again. Doesn't render the shower meaningless. We are born, we live, we die. Doesn't render life meaningless. All of the moments that we create, that we share, that we are conscious in this world, add up from moment to moment to nourish ourselves and to carry on the ripples of our lives throughout time and eternity. Sitting and moved, listening to Annie's song, and it struck me that even though that was a love song to Annie, think about it as a love song to life. Think of the miracle that we have senses to be filled and other people whose senses we fill. That our lives are sometimes a storm in the desert, sometimes peaceful and tranquil, and that the weather of our ideas, the weather of our souls, all of these things change and they're all a part of life. And despite all of the appearances of how big and complex and unfixable the world is, no matter how slow we are at learning to live with one another and love one another and forgive one another, it's still a wonderful challenge to get up in the morning and try to be just a little bit better. That it's not permanent, that we don't know what happens, I can live with that, and I can die with that. And I can celebrate in the middle this wonderful, miraculous, glorious thing called life that doesn't mean anything unless it is connected to you and you and you and our world. It matters. And it really personally matters to me what you do next.